Between the Lines on News Talk.
You're welcome back to News Talks Between the Lines. Claire McKenna in for Andrea today. And we're discussing some of the issues that families and children can face with Christmas providing its own set of pressures and challenges. And we're joined now by Colman Nochter, a child and adolescent psychotherapist at St. Patrick's Mental Health Service. Well, you're very welcome, Colman. You were listening in to the panel there and some of the work that they do. What about yourself? I mean, who are the sort of children and adolescents that you would see?
Well, I work in a mental health service, so the children that would come to me would tend to have developed mental disorder or mental illness. So you're oftentimes looking at young people with depression, self-harm, sometimes eating disorders or anxiety disorders. Traditionally, most of the bulk of the work would be between 12 and 18-year-olds, so you're talking about teenagers. But in my work as a psychotherapist, you'd see families across the board in terms of children as young as two or three are having kind of challenges in that area. So it's a broad spectrum of both ages and severity, I guess, from that point of view. It's a really interesting area to work in because it's changing all the time. But just touching on what the guys were talking about in terms of bereavement, stress, domestic violence, all of those things have huge impacts on children. And oftentimes, maybe not noticeable in the time, but they may develop over time.
And are you seeing the symptoms of some of the topics I discussed with the panel? Like when you get to adolescence, are some of the behaviours that children are acting out with or adolescents are acting out with, can they have started with a dysfunctional situation at home?
For sure. I mean, I think what happens in that early period, and I think one of the panelists suggested that the first 2 years are really important, and that's where that kind of hardwiring of the personality becomes real. So that's the lens with which you see the world. So if you're accustomed to seeing violence or neglect or deprivation or abuse, then that's just how the world appears to you. And so you develop that understanding, or that's your template. And that can be kind of accepted. And then as you hit adolescence, you start to become exposed to other realities, and the social relationships become more complex, and you see other families. And then you can actually realize, actually, my early experiences weren't the normative. Actually, they were really difficult or sad or complex. And especially something like bereavement, you could lose a parent or a sibling in a young age and not understand the complexity of it. But the grief matures with your age. So if you're a young girl who's lost her mum, maybe then when you're 13, 14, you're starting to get menstrual cycle, puberty, and you really miss your mum at that stage. That's when the grief can hit. And so from the point of view of the experiences of trauma or abuse or neglect or any of these adverse childhood experiences can occur at any time, even in adulthood. And we'd see it might only be at the beginning of intimate relationships that things start to crop up for you that were that have origins within your childhood. So it has huge significance, and a childhood does last a lifetime from that point of view. And it really has, I guess, indelible impacts on, again, how we experience the world, adversity, but also how we develop resilience and strength. And a childhood has the potential to really positively set us up or really hinder us in terms of our adult and later life experiences.
Something the panel said that really struck me was the idea of hope, that even though they're very bleak situations that they're dealing with, and you also with what you spoke about there, that there is a way out, that there is a formula that you can follow, that you can go on to lead a normal life. Do you feel the same way as they?
Yeah, I mean, again, you can't almost equate the experience of somebody with their reaction, because everyone reacts differently to different circumstances. So just because somebody has had kind of adverse childhood experiences isn't a guarantee that they're going to be traumatized, that they're going to struggle with it. And one of the things I think that's probably we don't talk about it enough is the concept of self-worth, you know. And if a child has a value on themselves, even if they've experienced really difficult things, really severe losses, but they have that sense of their own value, their own, and that essentially translates into hope, because it's a belief that I can manage, I can survive, I can get through this.
And as parents, how do you give them that?
I think it's about being realistic. I mean, I would always say when you approach parenting, it's really tempting to have your expectations really high, and then you fail at it, and then you feel bad about it. Or having an expectation, as the guys were saying, that's too low, and actually not valuing ourselves enough. I would say the best advice I'd give you is you're approaching parenting like you'd approach a roller coaster with a child. So if you're sitting beside them on the roller coaster, you don't promise that everything's going to be okay, because it may not be. You don't promise that you won't be scared or difficult or terrified. But what you do promise is that we will be there together. And so what you're saying is you're just putting your arm around the child and saying, whatever is up ahead, we're in this as a team and we can get through it and we will manage whatever happens. And that gives a child just a sense of their own value, that they are worthy of that support and that they can take on adversity. They can absorb things that are going to be challenging. And it doesn't set up an unrealistic expectation of the future, but it also supports, it removes the sense of isolation and aloneness. And from any of our perspectives, loneliness is the one thing that we know negatively affects our mental health. So if you have that one good enough adult or somebody who shows that they care or somebody who can get you to believe in your own value, it becomes the most sustaining element to our self-worth, our mental health, our development, our resilience and all of those things. So it is about sustaining that belief in their self-esteem and value. And I think if we can do that, that it naturally inspires hopefulness that something can be different.
There are a lot of delays in mental health services, particularly for children. I mean, does that frustrate you? I've heard anecdotally of children on the spectrum having a diagnosis of ASD and waiting 2 years before they even get any kind of intervention. And I just imagine the families who have struggled up until now with things not being exactly on par or where they should be. Then they get this diagnosis. They think, OK, now we've a plan, we've something we can do. And then they're just left for 2 years. And that's just one small example of the myriad of things that are out there.
Yeah, I mean, we've never had more mental health services than we have now. But we've never had a more unhappy and mentally unwell population than we have now. So our supply does not meet demand, is nowhere near it. And so from the point of view of these long waiting lists, and everything you'll hear about childhood is early intervention is key. So the longer something goes on, the more bleak the prognosis will be. And we really need to bolster services in some ways. But I've spoken about this before. I think the issue is oftentimes one of signposting. I think the infrastructure of our services is really poor because you need children will have educational needs, they will have health needs, and they will have social needs. And they're all very different things. They all need to be met differently by different services. What we don't have in this country is joined up thinking where these services will work together. So you're either sent to one queue or the other. And if you're in the wrong queue, you wait for 18 months to find out you're in the wrong queue, only to have to join.
Start all over again.
And so the design of throwing more resources into a services that infrastructurally is not designed for purpose is throwing water into a leaky bucket in that sense. And I think what we need to do is to mental health issues belong in health. That's where that belongs. So children who have mental health problems will also have social problems. They may have learning difficulties that need to be met in an educational supportive setting. And we need to have these services working together. And where there isn't that kind of issue of ownership, you know, where I can't work with this family because you're working with them already. And we exist in silos. And that's a cultural thing that needs to change. But from the point of view, like the guys from the Barnardos are saying, sometimes people don't need individual sessions once a week or family therapy. They need someone to help them get the kids up in the morning. And that's a very different need. That can't be supplied by a mental health service, which is not built for that purpose. But we would have families with those needs that we can't meet. You know what I mean?
And yeah,
so
yeah,
from the point of view of the services are creaking at the seams in terms of the demand upon them. And they do need more resources without a doubt. But they also need better design and services need to work together more. And we need to have multi-agency working. And I think it's an aspiration of ours, but it's something that we have not been able to successfully achieve at this point.
Are you seeing increases in the levels of anxiety in the young people that you're seeing?
Yeah, I mean, I'd be on record for saying I think anxiety is the epidemic of this generation. And, you know, there's lots of reasons for that. We have a decade of really uncertain times in this country. We have, you know, everything we're told from media onwards is, you know, things are okay now, but that could change at any moment. So we live in this constant state of dread. And children are growing up in that lens of the world being that really unsafe place, and everything is so uncertain. And anxiety comes from fear of the unknown. And so if we have this kind of high expectation culture that everything needs to be quick and we can't be bored and we can't be frustrated, that every time we experience that, we kind of implode a little bit. And so there's young people who are under huge academic pressure from primary school onwards. There's children who are under stress from performance levels, all these sorts of things.
Yeah, parents and where the focus lies.
Parents are under stress. So I've never heard I've been in this job 20 years, 21 years this year. And in the last 5 years, I've never met more anxious children. but I've also never met more anxious parents. And I think the issue being that culturally we have this anxiety problem. It's a really hard one to solve.
I know, as you say, it's not just a magic wand. But what is your advice to people to try and turn that stress down a little?
Well, I think there's a simple formula for happiness. It's expectation minus reality equals happiness. So if your expectations are really high and your reality is slowly creeping along behind that, the gap between expectation and reality creates unhappiness. So we can't change reality, but we can change expectations. And I think as a parent in 2018, we need to, you know, drop the coconut oil and avocado demand and really just get back to actually caring for our children, connecting with our children. We live in a technology absorbed society where anxiety is everywhere, expectations are driven. There's no need for us to ever be bored, to ever be stressed, or that's at least what we're sold. And actually, in fact, it's much more realistic for children to realize things will be tough and we'll get through these tough times, but we'll only get through it if we get in together.
And like the roller coaster, I'm beside you all the way.
Let's kneel in, yeah.
Well, as with the panel, I could talk to you for a lot longer, but that's all we have time for today. Colman Nochter, child and adolescent psychotherapist at St. Patrick's Mental Health Service. Thank you very much to you and to the panel from Barnardo's. Now, just a reminder that all this week, News Talk has been following the story of Barnardo's, their team, their challenges, and the thousands of children that will benefit from their work this Christmas. You can find out more and support and donate what you can at newstalk.com/Barnardo's. If you've missed any of the programme, you can download the podcast on our website at newstalk.com or search for News Talks Between the Lines on iTunes or any other podcast player. My thanks to the production team, Aidan McKelvey and Stephen Jordan. Bobby Kerr is up next with Bobby's Late Breakfast, and Between the Lines is back next Sunday from 8.
Between the Lines on News Talk.